spent several years working on oil and gas drilling issues in Colorado. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, we're talking about two separate issues, and that is the flood damage and what's causing these, biblical floods, quote, biblical floods, and also fracking. It seemed that from the introduction that you might be able to address both of those in 15 minutes or less.
Oh, well, there's a lot of information out there, but in terms of this specific flood and what the impacts are and the causes are, I think we're going to see a lot more information come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't have all that now, but there are many scientists located in Boulder. It has a university and many federal labs as well as independent research facilities there, and I imagine that we'll have a lot of scientists already looking at this and looking at it into the future. Really, why did it happen this way? It's been called a 1,000-year flood, which means the odds are that will happen only once in 1,000 years. There are other flooding events, but this one obviously was a catastrophic disaster that is completely overwhelming. So I think there will be a lot more research coming out about it. Obviously, can see a lot of the immediate impacts are to people's homes and livelihoods and the infrastructure there, many people doing what they can to get out emergency services and assistance to people who need it. But one of the concerns that really has come up in the eastern part of the flood area, not so much in the foothills but in the plains, is the impacts on oil and gas development site. It's a very densely developed area for oil and gas production. There are a lot of sites. Some of them are older, some of them are newer, but many of them are in the flooded areas. And we've seen photos, aerial photos and close-up photos that people have taken of tanks that have fallen over, whereas they should have been secured to the ground, just flooded well pads that might have had either chemicals stored on them or waste that is potentially toxic stored on them. So in all the threats that come with a flood, the industrial contamination is one of them, and this is a particularly large industry in that area.
Mm. And although the industry, I'm sure, could have done more to secure some of these tanks and industrial equipment, in a way, perhaps they shouldn't be blamed too much because, I mean, Colorado is not used to seeing floods like this, if this is a 1-in-1,000-year flood, biblical proportion. But this is the kind of thing we're going to have to start preparing for in the wake of climate change's arrival.
I think that's fair. Nobody would have predicted that this type of disaster would be as extensive as it is. That said, we do think Colorado and other states, but need to have stronger rules. For example, Colorado doesn't have buffers from enough of the streams and rivers and reservoirs that are particularly at risk during flood periods. So that's something that we think Colorado should have, but also other states. There could have been some rules put in place that might have reduced some of this risk for this flood, and it does, as you say, sound the warning that for future floods, really more precautions need to be taken. When there are natural disasters, there's no way to predict exactly how they're going to proceed and exactly how to, it's probably impossible to prevent every single instance of contamination, but there are some more things that could be done.
And even the term natural disaster, I certainly know what you mean by that, and that is a commonly used description. But if one wanted to really go deeper, they could say, well, maybe this isn't just nature doing her thing. Maybe this is the impact of we humans and the way we've been getting around. It's not nice to fuel Mother Nature, but we have been. So mm-hmm. It's almost like when people I've seen on Facebook, friends of mine there's a friend of mine from high school, and she was, screaming about the fires, what's going on, and now the floods, and, showed picture of what it was like in the same spot with the fire damage, and then now the flood. And, it's hard to not say, well, this is what is going to happen more often if we don't, sort of start connecting the dots. And not to scare people, not to be in any way insensitive, but just to point out that this doesn't have to be quite this devastating, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that tying, particular events to climate change is something that the scientists look closely at, but absolutely with the climate change progression the way it's happening, there are concerns about all these severe, what they call severe weather events, that stem from all the different aspects of climate change. Certainly, you know, this is an area that's been very dry in the past with drought that affects how the soil absorbs floodwater. The fires and drought that can reduce vegetation can increase some of the flood risks. So it's all interrelated in a way that we, that scientists are understanding better all, you know, all the time. Obviously, a lot of the climate change is something that's, you know, going to be researched more and more.
It's just the extremes, you know. Dry weather happens, as you say, in Colorado, but the, you know, prolonged severe drought leading to, you know, contributing perhaps to the wildfires we've seen there. And then, you know, of course, they were praying for rain, needed rain, but not this much rain in such a short amount of time. But it seems like that's kind of the signature of climate change, climate chaos, just too much of one thing in one place, you know, in a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the oil and gas industry, you know, there are, as I said, there are more precautions that can be taken in terms of keeping these facilities with dangerous chemicals away from waterways, reservoirs, streams, rivers, not prohibiting open-air pits. That's one thing that people are extremely concerned about, and that probably presents the greatest risk right now in Colorado, are the open-air pits where wastewater can be stored, some of it which can be quite toxic. We think those pits should be banned. They haven't been banned in Colorado or other states. So there are, you know, using less toxic chemicals throughout the process. There are many precautions that can be taken in the future. This is a very dirty industry that involves a lot of toxic chemicals and hazardous substances that are dredged, you know, from deep underground up to the surface with the drilling and fracking process. But there are at least many practices that could be implemented that would help the industry reduce the risk. And those are things that absolutely should be required but haven't been at the state level.
Is this the first time in this country that we've seen such, you know, massive flooding in areas where there is fracking taking place? Might this be some kind of unfortunate accident in terms of, you know, research that we can learn from?
I think we absolutely can learn from it. It is, to the best of my knowledge, the only time where this much devastation has happened in an area with so much oil and gas development. During a lot of the storms on the East Coast, we were very worried about the potential impacts in areas that have seen a lot of development recently, like in Pennsylvania in the Marcellus Shale. Fortunately, you know, while we did see pictures of flooded well pads, they were nothing like what's been happening in Colorado, and where a lot of the biggest floods in the country have been in recent years, they haven't necessarily overlapped with where the extensive oil and gas development is. But oil and gas development and fracking is coming to more and more places all the time, and it's coming closer and closer to communities and where people live because of the way many of the zoning laws have been implemented and the property rights that go along with development of oil and gas resources. These facilities are often right next to people's homes, next to schools, in the middle of farms, in areas where you really can't risk having chemical contamination. But nevertheless, that's where a lot of the development is occurring, and these facilities are coming closer and closer to where people live, and there's more and more development all the time. So a flood doesn't have to be a 1,000-year flood to present contamination risks to homes, communities, farms. We're going to see floods that might not be quite as devastating, but we'll see those more often than we will a 1,000-year flood, obviously. So we do need to take precautions, and we do need to learn from this as much as possible. Really, where is it safe it's not safe, but where is the risk at least a little less if we have to site oil and gas wells in certain locations? What can be required of the industry to make sure the risk is reduced as much as possible.
And what is your opinion of the necessity and safety risks of, you know, hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as fracking? If we can just kind of back up a little bit and have the bigger picture view, you know, many people have said this is part of the solution to avoiding burning fossil fuels and contributing to climate change, greenhouse gases, but of course there's a whole other layer of side effects, if you will, problems that we're starting to see from, you know, potentially contaminated water to earthquakes.
Well, absolutely. This is, as I said, the oil and gas industry and drilling and fracking is a dirty industry with a lot of risks to groundwater, surface water, soils, just communities and quality of life, air pollution, whether it's greenhouse gases or toxic air pollutants. It's a long list of impacts that come with this industry. And sometimes just the effects on communities can be devastating because of increases in traffic accidents, crime, deteriorating infrastructure. I mean, it's not just environmental risk. So it's a long list of burden to society that comes with developing these fossil fuels. And our goal is to focus our priority on expanding renewable energy and energy efficiency as quickly as possible so that we can reduce our use of fossil fuels. We really need to have a clear path to a clean energy future, because this is a, you know, the oil and gas and fossil fuel industry is just a dirty industry that is not really going to get to where the country wants to be in terms of clean and renewable energy.
Well put. And then just going back to Colorado for our last question, are there many croplands in this part of Colorado? And, you know, what happens to all those crops that they were desperately trying to keep alive during the drought now flooded?
There is a lot of agricultural industry and farmland in the area that was flooded. And I think that the regulators are really going to have to be aggressive about monitoring exactly where the floodwaters were, testing soils, determining what the risks are, and they have said they've started to map the sites of where all the oil and gas wells are relative to the flood, and what we're hoping is that the regulators, including public health officials as well as environmental regulators, will really be on the ground in force. Because not only are the floodwaters potentially contaminated, not only with oil and gas chemicals, but with other industrial chemicals and sewage and all kinds of things that can be dangerous, but once the floodwaters recede, the soil can, you know, have residue that can be contaminated and toxic, and that's what we saw in New Orleans after Katrina. So people need to be cautious about interacting with the floodwaters. They certainly should avoid the floodwaters every extent possible, and even the soils afterward. And in terms of farmland and cropland, you know, the regulators will need to be out there to determine whether there's been any impact on agricultural products.
Should this be a teachable moment, Amy, for Americans with the flood coming in the wake of the severe fires in Colorado?
I think so. I think that that's why people are glued to the images and following it for a number of reasons. One is because the personal stories are tragic about people losing their homes, even losing their lives, and everyone wants to see if they can help or just be supportive. But there is the context of, you know, what does this mean? I think people all over the country wonder about, drought or fires or other things that can be tied to global warming and climate change. It's just people talk about the weather all the time, and especially in Colorado, where I used to live, people spend a lot of time outdoors, and people from all walks of life are always talking about the weather and the changes in weather. For example, I was sitting in the dentist chair, and the dental hygienist was saying about how the weather was so different than when she grew up, whatever, 20, 30 years ago. And it's something that people, notice. Mm-hmm. And wonder about and want the science and want to understand what they can do to prevent climate change and get our climate back to a safe place for the planet.
Well, so that's what we focus on every week here on the program,
yeah,
is some of the threats we're facing and what we can do about it. And so I really thank you for joining us. We are out of time. Amy Moll. Amy is a writer for the Natural Resources Defense Council, one of my favorite green groups. Also, as you've heard, an expert on gas and drilling, fracking, if you will, and some of the hazards that are posed by it. Have a great green week. See you next time.